John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily, and the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto, America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Darren and Chase out for the day. They'll be back with us on Monday. They're on a little vacay. Willie Donick, Marquise Munson, Elijah Campbell here with you on 102.5 The Game. And Joe Rexroad is with us from The Athletic. I read his article this morning on the legacy of Grantland Rice, a famous sports writer who was born in Murfreesboro, attended Vanderbilt, and is most known for some of the writings he did once he left the Nashville area and became sort of a national sports journalist for the ages. And I really didn't even know what the theme of the piece was when I started reading it, Joe. But by the end of it, I was really, thinking of a lot of different things because of what you brought up in the article. Excellent stuff.
Oh, thanks a lot, Willie. I appreciate it. Yeah, The Athletic has tried to come up with some different sort of thematic weeks, greatest comebacks. I know one week it was like, write about your sports hero, and we've had movies and all that stuff. So this is media week, and of course, you plan these a few weeks in advance. So I was like, it'd be cool to write about Grantland Rice. He's from Nashville. I don't know that much about him other than what I think a lot of people know. The outlined against the blue-gray sky, the four horsemen, not whether you won or lost, how you played the game, things like that. But didn't really know that much about him. So I read his book, and you go through that book, and there's just a few things in there. You're like, whoa, what was that? And so then I kind of started thinking in terms of, how is someone like that, regarded today? How do you sort of reconcile understanding the time that he was in, but then also still, there's just some things that were obviously okay then that are far from okay now. And then how do you sort of still assess someone? So it was just sort of trying to get at that a little bit. And Robert Meacham, Vanderbilt professor, actually just said something on television that I thought was interesting, and maybe you can apply it to other areas of life beyond, the idea of the Confederate monuments and sort of comparing that to, presidents and founding fathers.
Well, that is something that is being discussed all around the country right now in terms of, whether it be a statue or a chant. I just read where the University of Florida is the Gator Bait chant that we've been hearing for decades. I never even looked into the history of it, but they did, and they're going to discontinue it, right? There's a lot of these discussions going on. So your article was a great prism to look through when it came to Grantland Rice. But you mentioned John Meacham. He gave kind of I think this was a really good way to throw it out there to maybe start a discussion when you're going to have a difficult discussion about something like this, the complexities of history, how do we view it. But he had kind of a line that you draw to differentiate how somebody from way back when there was a lot different conditions, a lot deeper racism, however you want to label it, times were different, right? In the early 1900s, we don't have the same standards from the 1930s as we do today. We're hoping we've progressed forward and we've got more that we've got to progress. But tell us the terms that John Meacham told you, where he sort of divides the line when you look back through history.
Yeah, and by the way, thank you. Did I say Robert Meacham? I may have, and I apologize. That's a former NFL receiver, so sorry about that, and thank you for the correction. Yeah, well, John Meacham, and actually I will tell you, for this story, I got to give credit to Dan Wolkin. Now, Dan Wolkin is one of several people, you and I know a lot of them, who went to Vanderbilt on the Russell Rice scholarship, which is for people interested in sports writing. You know, Andrew Marinus, Mitch Light. You go back to Roy Blunt Jr. and Skip Bayless.
We had Tyler Kepner on this morning, another one of them. So just another example. So many. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was the one, he said, actually, it's funny because I just saw this thing from John Meacham, and it's kind of I'd never thought of it that way. So I went and looked it up online. I was like, that's really, like, I like, basically what he was saying was, because a lot of people are saying, oh, we're going to tear these Confederate monuments. Oh, so what's next? The Washington Monument, the Jefferson Monument. You know, these are monuments that these people own slaves. I mean, do you just erase all the history? And his point was, you know, if you were committed to, you know, a greater union, then that's a distinguishing factor. You know, if you were still for the Constitution and for, you know, which of course eventually added the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, Civil Rights Act, all these things. You know, even if you didn't believe all that stuff at the time, you still believed in the Constitution and the idea of equality and moving towards something. You know, you can contrast that with, you know, someone from the Confederacy who actually declared war on the United States and was for, you know, essentially abandoning the Constitution. That's one thing. And, of course, another thing he brought up, and I think when we talk about the Nathan Bedford Forrest debate, Willie, I mean, that thing went up in 1978. This is not
not 1878, 1978. Right. You do look at it differently when you know that. I wonder how many people knew that. That was eye-opening for me.
So what is that? I mean, to me, it's like, okay, so we're starting to have some civil rights in this country, and now you put this bust up of, sure, a great Confederate general, also the first Grand Wizard of the KKK, also someone who oversaw the slaughter of more than 300 black Union troops who were trying to surrender in the Civil War, probably the one of the most disgusting acts ever, perpetrated in the Civil War. So why was that put up in 1978? Why are we cherishing that as some historical relic that we can't tear? That was, to me, I think the motivations for even having that up are very questionable. So that was his distinguishing factor. So can you take that to other walks of life, sports writing, you know, journalism, anything? You know, I think with Grantland Rice, you know, what I found in his book, there were some very racist beliefs and phrases in the book. It was also a general idea that it's good that, you know, Jackie Robinson happened. You know, he talked about Satchel Paige. What could he have done? I think some of his views for that time were probably largely rejected by a lot of his readers, too. So I think the overall feeling and, you know, belief that you got from him was that this was progress, this was good, there should be integration in sports. And I think you have to try to, you know, take that into account as well. And again, it just, if you're going to celebrate and look at people from different eras, I think you do have to look at the warts and everything.
Right. I think that was, it came through in the piece, which I think you said it really well, Joe, and I hope, as we have these conversations, and right now this is an opportunity that we're all trying to take advantage of, where we're examining these things, where life is at a little bit of a slower pace, especially for all of us that are waiting for the next contest to go on the field or on the court or on the ice. But where you can't, there is a complexity to it, as you just mentioned with Grantland Rice. You had some great quotes from him. You had some things that really warm your heart about race relations, and then you point out some other specific things that he wrote that would definitely make you cringe, but then you try to look at it, what was the context of the time and stuff like that. So it's nuanced, it's complex, it's not a simple thing, but it's something that hopefully we can all look at as we try to collectively move forward here.
Yeah, and one area, you know, Grantland Rice, I would say he was out front on women in sports. And, of course, again, people have to think back, early 1900s, that was just not a thing, you know. And Grantland Rice, in fact, you know, reading a book about him by Charles Fountain, you know, there was very little attention given to Babe Didrikson. And, of course, he later became Babe Didrikson Zaharias, one of the greatest athletes of all time, period. I mean, you're talking about someone who won the Olympics, won gold in all these events, became an all-time great golfer. I mean, truly an all-time athlete. He wrote extensively about her and celebrated her and wrote about her just as he wrote about any other athlete. His peers largely ignored her, and at times, and I put in a line from Paul Gallico in the piece to kind of contrast some of the stuff he wrote versus some of his peers, you know, just totally, just awful disrespect of a woman's athlete at the time. So, you know, you take that into account too. I think in that area, he certainly stood out as a progressive compared to his peers, and probably in terms of race, not as much so, but still, I mean, as Fountain said, and I quoted him, I mean, everyone at the time was a bigot. Now, of course, everyone couldn't have been, or else there would have never been any progress, but that was mainstream thinking.
We're talking to Joe Rexroad of The Athletic. Now, Joe, you know, when doing the reporting on this, is there something that you kind of took away from this in your own journalism and looking back at how he reported things, and you kind of studied this and looked at it and was like, hey, I didn't know that about this, about, you know, Grantland Rice?
Well, yeah, Marquise, and actually my initial idea for this was comparing access then to today, until I started, you know, I read the whole thing, and I was like, okay, well, this is something that I think is more important. But the access stuff is incredible, and that's where, you know, obviously we'll never go back to that. It's just hard to even imagine. Basically, he made more than everyone he covered, first of all. You know, I mean, basically he made like $1.5 million if you put it in today's dollars in the 20s. You know, he's out buying like a place on the ocean in the Hamptons, you know. And so, like, you know, celebrity athletes sought him out. I mean, like, seriously, the most amazing thing to me is the Newt Rockne thing. He invites Newt over to his house to drink the night before the Notre Dame Army game, and Newt's like, you know, I've got this speech about the Gipper, and he died 8 years ago, and I think we're going to get killed tomorrow. I might bust out this speech. George Gipp told me, you know, I should say this speech sometime to a team, and I get Grant like, yeah, go for it. You know, so like, he knew about the Gipper speech before it happened, you know. And all kinds of stuff like that, where he's in the hotel room with Babe Ruth the day before the called shot in the World Series. Or, I mean, you know, it was very much that, at, you know, journalists and athletes, one, they were much more friends and, you know, allies than, of course, today. I mean, I think, and of course, you could look at that and talk about, we talk today about people who are homers. I mean, my goodness, you know, back then, I mean, it's basically like you're on the team, playing on the team train, playing cards and cheering on the boys, you know. I mean, it's very different. But also just the celebrity and the the money and all that stuff. I mean, it was just, he was at the forefront of really a new industry. And I mean, even spectator sports when he got into the business were new, you know, and becoming a thing. So it really is an amazing career.
Is there a relationship that he had that kind of shocked you, like kind of brought you by surprise? Because I'm saying, like, man, he had a relationship with Joe Louis. Like, I want to hang out with Joe Louis. I want to be valued friends with Joe Louis. So is there, like, a relationship that he had that kind of surprised you a little bit?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, honestly, I'll tell you, like, Ty Cobb, and that's the thing. You think about Joe Louis, and it's like, you know, that's cool. He was friends with Joe Louis. Apparently, they you know, had a long friendship. I actually reached out to Joe Louis's son for this, but he was just like, yeah, I was so young. I mean, I know my dad, you know, was definitely a good friend of his, but he couldn't, you know, he didn't have a lot of information about it. But, you know, he was also super close with Ty Cobb. Now, of course, Ty Cobb is very well known for being very racist, you know, and Ty Cobb, I mean, that's part of his legacy, along with just, you know, his nastiness on the field and all that stuff, along with being, one of the greatest hitters of all time. But, you know, you think about that, too, and, like, how certain people thought, and you're friends with different kinds of people in there, and how did that all work? But honestly, you know, on the writing side of it, you know, it's like Ernest Hemingway, F. Scott Fitzgerald, you know, I mean, they were all in New York at this time in the early 20th century, sort of this group of people who, you know, we still talk about 100 years later.
Yeah, and it's kind of, and I was going to ask you, Joe, what is your approach when it comes to, you know, writing and talking about kind of like those race relations? Because, you know, obviously we're in a different time and we're in a different era now, so a lot of these conversations are a little bit more open now, but you still have the occasional people that want to say, well, stick to sports, you know, but a lot of times, a lot of these things, as we're seeing now, has to do with sports. So what has always been your approach to kind of how to report and on these things that involve sports and race relations?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think it's always been a part of sports, and I think it's important moving forward. Like the Gatorade thing Willie just mentioned, I had no idea. And then I read up on it, and it was just horrifying to see the history of that term. So a lot of people may say, well, I didn't know that, and I like saying that, and why can't we keep saying it at the games? And it's like, well, but now you know the history, so no, you shouldn't still say it, you know? And there's some comments on my story like, oh, we're just going to cancel and erase everyone and just erase our history. And I replied, no, I'm not trying to erase Grantland Rice. I'm saying, though, that we should have a complete history and recognize the flaws and warts and understand why and understand the context of the time. It's complicated. It is nuanced. It's not easy. But I think, Marquise, you know, that discussion, I mean, you think about, you know, over time, think about Muhammad Ali and how he was perceived then and now how he's perceived, you know, and Joe Louis. In a different way, but Muhammad Ali, of course, for Vietnam and all that stuff. And Colin Kaepernick now is somebody, it'll be really interesting to see how he is regarded by history 20, 50 years from now. I bet you it's a lot different than what a lot of people were saying in 2016. So I think it's always been a part of sports. It always will be. And I think we've got to take these things on and talk about them clearly and you know, with full context and not, leave anything out. I think that's really important.
And Joe, before, you know, we got to let you go soon, but before we have to talk about your Johnny Majors article that was pretty big as well. I got a notification. I was like, Johnny Majors article. Wonder who wrote this. Is it David Upton? No, it was Joe Rex wrote. And I was like, definitely going to read this. And, you know, definitely, you know, a lot of interesting stories and pieces in that. So, and one thing that always intrigued me, because, you know, obviously I don't know. I wasn't raised in the Johnny Majors era. And it's kind of sad that the only thing that I know about Johnny Majors and the first thing that comes to my mind about Johnny Majors is, you know, his issues with, you know, who. So it's just like, that's the thing that I come up with when I speak about, you know, Majors is, you know, talking about Phil Fulmer and his issues with him. But for someone like me and for someone who wrote a piece like that about Johnny Majors, what would you tell me to look up with when it comes to Johnny Majors?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, that was a piece a long time in the coming, and I would say for that, I read his book, which was written with Ben Bird, by the way, Rick Bird's late father, who, of course, covered Johnny's tenure in Knoxville. You Can Go Home Again. That's from 1986, so it's more of the early days of Tennessee. But, yeah, I mean, look, the bottom line with Johnny Majors, it's obviously sad he passed away, and honestly, I had no idea talking to him for hours the week before he passed away that, you know, I mean, he said he was doing well, and he was great that week talking about it. It's pretty amazing that he passed away peacefully looking out on the Tennessee River. But if you look at Johnny Majors, I think he was the greatest living legend of Tennessee football. And I think when the history – you start with General Nealon, and then you go to Johnny Majors next as a player, you know, second in the Heisman, two-time SEC Player of the Year, but then also as a coach, I think he's a clear two, and I think the Majors family, which I wrote a lot about in this piece, clearly the first family of football in this state. So I learned a lot from it, and you're right. I think everybody thinks of the same thing, Marquise. You think of Fulmer Majors, but there is a lot more to the story.
Joe, great stuff. I hope a lot of people check out both of those pieces, and also your piece on John Ward and what it's like to succeed a legendary sportscaster. That's a good one, too. So kudos to all you guys at The Athletic. I know this has been a challenging time. We read about, I know they laid some people off, including our good buddy John Glennon, but you guys have met the challenge really well with how to get stimulating sports writing done during this time when there's no games.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. And yeah, miss John every day, but no, we're doing our best in this time and really appreciate you guys having me on. Thanks a lot.
All right, sounds good. John,
appreciate you, Joe.
Joe Rex Road with The Athletic. And so I'm looking at a text. You guys, my phone just buzzed. I got a little distracted there. Tell me what we need to do, because I know we have Elliot Friedman coming up at the top of the hour.
Well, we could just talk here for a little bit and then break and then go to Elliot.
All right. So,
but what Joe is mentioning and what you mentioned like towards the end of that interview is basically there's been a lot of great journalism that's come out, stories that, you know, we probably would have never did if we had sports around this time. I know nothing about Grantland Rice, you know, and I read the article and now I feel like I know. But I know nothing about it because I'm not from Nashville. So, you know, learning these different stories and obviously the Johnny Major story, like I know my bits and pieces about Johnny Majors, but not to in depth of what Joe had in his article. And I think this has been a perfect time to get some of these stories out that we never really talk about because we always have sports going on and we always have something to talk about. And now that we don't, we've had to kind of dig in some of these stories. And I think that's awesome.
Oh, I've loved it. That's like the only thing about, you know, not having sports is that you get to catch up on things like that. And for anyone listening, if you don't have a subscription to The Athletic, I highly recommend it just because this is the kind of stuff you get even when it is a slow sports period. I haven't got to read the Grantland Rice piece yet, but I do remember in journalism school, which I'm only a couple months removed from, with a lot of Grantland Rice discussion, and it's good education, you know, for anyone who even wants to cover. The Athletic has a lot of good examples to go off of, and the good story ideas too. I mean, they've been as good as it gets in terms of coming up with story ideas in a time where there really isn't any sports going on.
Well, we can go down the list of discussions that people are having on how to, in our mind, come to a resolution on where to place, you know, things in history, right? And the complexity of it. This is a great time to do it from a sports perspective. But, you know, as we mentioned, the Gatorade chant, if you've ever been to a game with Florida involved, you've heard that chant, right? And you've never, I had no idea, but they're looking into that now. Would they be doing that if we weren't in the situation we're in? Probably not. But I like the fact that we're reexamining these things and taking a look, and how do we place all these things when it comes to statues and chants and historical significance for a lot of different things? But I thought Joe's article really gave us a good compass there to sort of look at, start a discussion. How many times, Marquise, have we been talking about this in the last few weeks? Is we need to have some conversations, right? We need to have conversations where people are coming at it with different views, right? But have a real meaningful conversation where it's not arguing back and forth and what about this and what about that and having absolutes, right? There's different layers to it. And this kind of stuff really helps, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all about listening, and we've been promoting listening and learning. Like, you know, I want to talk to someone of the opposite of me to learn how they think and their thought process throughout everything that's going on, and vice versa. They can hear from me, and then we kind of share stories, share ideas, and kind of figure out a common ground. I've had many of conversations in the last couple weeks, one-on-one, group, you know, whoever, and I'm more than willing to have those conversations with people. But I think there's so many people out here that are scared of those uncomfortable conversations that they try to run away from it, and you can't do that. Like, those conversations need to be had because, you know, obviously if you're oblivious to something, the only way to learn is by asking questions and asking questions to the right people and talking to the right people about it. So I think once we get to that common ground, we can move this country and move everything else forward.
And I think it's important, a theme of, and again, the article is called How He Played the Game, Assessing the Complicated Legacy of Grantland Rice. And listen, Grantland Rice is a Vanderbilt guy. I have been reading about Grantland Rice. I know, as Joe pointed out, so many of the scholarship winners of that award who went to Vanderbilt, I went to Vanderbilt with because of that scholarship that afforded the opportunity to those guys. But I'd never read about some of the history here. But I think it's important to try to figure out, you know, if somebody did write something that was racist at the time, or it still is racist today, like Grantland Rice did, you know, is that an automatic disqualifier? It shouldn't be, right? You have to look at everything, right? And then what is over the line that we have to, that really maybe does change your view of the legacy? It is nuanced. It is not simple. And that's why it takes detailed discussion and detailed thought to try to place it in the right place.
I always see growth in people. Like, you know, who Marquise Munson was 10 years ago is not Marquise Munson almost 30 years old. Like, there, it's always a progression. It's always growth. It's always you learn different things by different experiences and different conversations you had. I may have said something at, you know, 14, 13 that I, you know, I regret at the age of 30. And, you know, but that's, you know, I don't want people to judge something based off of what I said when I was 13. You know, I want people to judge the person that I am now and judge the person that I learned from that mistake. But I think sometimes we get into a situation to where, you know, the only time guys really want to do be, you know, grow and have growth is when they get called out for it. And no, we shouldn't have growth because we get called out about it and we got caught. We should have growth because, you know, that's what we do as a human, as, you know, everyday years, as we get older, let's just grow every year. So, you know, and I think once we do that, I think we live in a better society when people just learn how to just grow and move forward with things and move stuff in the past and then focusing on the future.
Good stuff. It ties into what we were talking about with Tony Kemp yesterday, the plus one effect that he's trying to get out. Just that mindset of listening to other people, rubbing off on somebody, looking things in a different way. That's how we progress. If you can get one person to do that, and that person gets one person to do that, we're going to make some progress.
And we're going to we're probably going to disagree on things, but let's just create dialogue. Let's just create dialogue. Let's, you know, let's learn, you know, and give me a reason. Have a rebuttal for why you disagree with me, and let's have a conversation and create dialogue instead of just saying, "No, I disagree with you, so I'm not going to listen to anything else you got to say."
I hear you. When we come back, Elliot Friedman will join us. We'll talk NHL. Stay tuned. We're coming back here on Darren Donick and Chase.
10 hours on my feet, traffic, noise, everybody needing something from me. My head is spinning. I just need the world to stop for 1 second. But then I get home, shoes off, phone out, and I open Modo Casino. Hundreds of slots, classic table games. It's my instant reset. The variety I want in the quiet I need.
Modo Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Modo.us for more details. Download the Modo Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Modo Casino. America's social casino.